Well, thank you very much. Thank you for coming, and thank you for inviting us. We're going to spend a few minutes talking about Cuba and how the Latin American School of Medicine, or ELAM, we think could be a very unique pipeline for creating or increasing diversity in the U.S. healthcare workforce. So I'd like to spend a few minutes talking about, first, what's the status of the primary care pipeline in the United States, then focus on the Cuban context in terms of healthcare and education, and then focus even more on ELAM, which stands for Escuela Latinoamericana de Medicina, in Cuba, talk about the United States students who have been studying at ELAM and who have graduated, and then a little bit for you about opportunities that you can partake to learn more about Cuba. Much of this information, I'm sure, is already known to you folks, that we spend far more money on healthcare in the United States compared to any other country, but we continue to have subpar health indicators and significant disparities in healthcare, both in delivery of care as well as in the healthcare workforce. So-called minorities in the U.S. make up about a quarter of our population, but account for less than 10% of the physician workforce, and we continue to have a shortage of primary care physicians and a maldistribution of these physicians in both the urban and rural areas. Sadly, only about 5.5% of U.S. fourth-year medical students are interested in family medicine. There are a variety of reasons for this. One of them significantly is the debt burden for all graduates of medical schools. It's now between $100,000 and $150,000 per medical school graduate in the U.S. Graduating medical students have concerns about the workload that they would have to face as primary care physicians, but significantly there is a persistent lack of encouragement in medical schools for students to enter primary care, particularly family medicine. I certainly know this from my experience in my former employer, UCSF, here in San Francisco. And then there's a very low visibility of primary care physicians, particularly family medicines, in our culture. A little less than 50% of family medicine residency slots in the United States are filled by U.S. medical school graduates as of this year. So, this is ELAM in the outskirts of Havana. How can ELAM help fill the primary care pipeline? Let's talk a little bit first about Cuba and its healthcare indicators. Without detailing the other countries here, if you look at the fourth column over, you can see that Cuba spends only about $675 per capita for healthcare per year. In spite of this relative lack of resource and spending compared to Canada and the U.S., they have very good health outcome indicators, with a life expectancy of 78 years, and an infant mortality which is the same as Canada, which is the lowest in the Western Hemisphere. Cuba is top-heavy with physicians, having over 67 per 10,000 population, and maybe during the Q&A we can talk about what's behind that. Healthcare in Cuba is primarily a primary care process. 80% of the healthcare is done at the community level in these institutions called policlínicos and consultorios. And patients would live within 500 meters of every healthcare facility in Cuba. That's distributed throughout the urban and rural areas. It's an integrated approach to combining both public health and clinical care. And all graduates of all Cuban medical schools complete a 2-year family medicine residency. Subsequent to that, they can do a second residency if they wish, depending upon the needs of the country and the location of the need. This is Public Health 101. You all know about these in terms of the social determinants of health, but focusing on the right square, Cuba, in terms of its health service determinants, has a healthcare system that is accessible entirely and universally to the entire countryside, that is comprehensive given the limited resources that it has, and is very high quality given its limited resources. And it's organized in a horizontal fashion where there's an intersectorial level of cooperation and training among nurses, physicians, other healthcare professionals, the social service sector, as well as education in terms of teaching. And as I mentioned, the focus is on primary care. Another probably significant influence on the good healthcare outcomes in Cuba is that the social cohesion of the island is very great. It's a population of only about 11 million people, and the income disparities among the population is very narrow, which probably is a contributor to its health outcomes and primary care services. Its focus is prevention through a combination of education at both the professional school level as well as throughout the lay community in radio, television, newspaper. There's a very high degree of education, and the Cuban population is very knowledgeable about all healthcare issues. So let's focus a bit on ELAM, about which Margaret Chan, the Director General of WHO, made this observation after learning about the goals of the program in returning students or young physicians from many countries back to their home country. ELAM was created in 1998 after Hurricane Mitch devastated much of Central America. As most of you know, Cuba has a very strong sense of international solidarity, and they sent teams of physicians, nurses, and other healthcare professionals to Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. And when they returned to Cuba after their service, they described horrific conditions in the rural areas of those countries that had absolutely no healthcare services. So Cuba responded by developing the Latin American School of Medicine, which was just for international students. And as of now, there are over 10,000 students on full scholarships studying at the Latin American School of Medicine, representing over 60 countries, Bolivia being one of them, representing over 100 ethnic groups. Since 1990, actually since 2001, nearly 200 United States students have been studying at ELAM and have graduated. And if we have time, we could talk about how that story evolved and how United States students were able to study at the Latin American School of Medicine. The curriculum at ELAM is mainly based on the European model. It's a six-year program that is evidence-based now, with much more emphasis on problem-based and case-based learning. And the students are expected to know the best options for diagnosis and treatment, particularly because there are such limited resources in Cuba in terms of sophisticated laboratory testing and imaging capabilities. But there's an added emphasis on public health, health equity, community service, and significantly disaster medicine. The Hurricane Sandy, which is now raging up the eastern seaboard, took a heavy toll in Cuba, going through eastern Cuba, and significantly 11 people died in Cuba, which is very, very rare. So this must have been a very devastating storm that's now heading toward the eastern seaboard. As I mentioned, it's a six-year curriculum, with the first 2 years being the basic sciences, and the third and fourth year core clinical rotations are based in the polyclinics and the teaching hospitals. The fifth year is a focus on public health, specifically epidemiology, and training in disaster medicine, and not just disasters relating to hurricanes, but also fire and earthquakes. Cuba sends disaster teams throughout the world, sent a significantly large group to Iran and to China after the hurricanes they had over the past couple of years. And then the sixth year is a hospital-based internship program. All instruction is in Spanish, so students who come from non-Spanish-speaking countries take immersion courses prior to beginning their medical school training. And five out of the 6 years include a seven-week rotation in family medicine. So the entire education of Cuban physicians and the international students is heavily imbued in family medical care. Now, the U.S. students also study on scholarship at Cuba, so they are graduating virtually debt-free, which hopefully is an impetus for them to enter primary care in contrast to the U.S. counterparts. They are a very ethnically diverse group of students that I'll demonstrate to you. They come to Cuba committed to serving the underserved in both urban and rural areas. They graduate being fully bilingual, and by virtue of being U.S. students, they don't have to jump through or over many of the hoops and hurdles that international students do in order to obtain visas, et cetera, in order to practice and to enter residency. So this is the ethnic breakdown of ELAM graduates, of which there are now 66 or 67, and over half of them are African Americans, and the rest being Latinos, Caucasians, Asian Americans, and Native Americans. And we think the number of Native Americans is going to increase because there's some programs in cooperation with ELAM and the Navajo Nation where more Native American students are going to be going to Cuba to study medicine. Looking at the specialty choices, this is a survey that Medic did over the past, just this year, of 100 students. And you can see by the three bars on the left, over 50% of the students are interested in the primary care practices. In contrast, AAMC data from 2010 of an N of over 11,000 students, you can see the exact reverse, where over 50% of U.S. graduating medical students are interested in specialty areas, and a very small number in family medicine and internal medicine. So where are the ELAM graduates now? Of the 66 graduates since 2007, 17 are now in residency, 10 of them in family medicine, 4 in internal medicine, 2 in pediatrics, and 1 in emergency medicine. Those who haven't yet entered the match for residency training are completing the USMLE exams as well as getting the ECFMG certification done. And that's a real challenge in Cuba because the paperwork takes a very long time and all of it has to be translated from Spanish into English. After these students graduate, they are seeking U.S. clinical experiences in clinics and hospital settings. And some of them have entered international service, specifically Haiti, Venezuela, Ghana, and Nigeria. They make the transition to residency quite well with bringing strong clinical skills, specifically having been trained to work well with limited resources and a very deep experience with preventative medicine and public health and a very deep training in patient communication and engaging in the community level. These students do have challenges, however, and we should spend a minute or two talking about them. Because almost all of the students, the United States students studying in Elam, come from underserved communities and have very limited financial means, there are significant financial barriers for completing the USMLE examinations. And paradoxically, there's something of a language barrier because all of their training has been in Spanish, and of course, the National Board examinations are in English. So the students have to deal with translating from Spanish back to English, back to Spanish, and back to English so they can get the test answers correct. Once they graduate, they have scarce clinical opportunities in the U.S. as well as during their medical school years because they don't have the opportunity to take electives abroad like U.S. medical students do. So there are a few opportunities for them to come to the U.S. for clinical rotations and electives. The graduation from Elam is off-cycle, meaning it's in July and sometimes in August, so that some students, actually most students, can't enter the match for residency until the following year after graduation. We're seeing more and more students who are very, very motivated now, and some of them are getting their acts together far more quickly and passing the national boards prior to their graduation and getting the certification ducks all lined up in a row. So this year, two or three or four students have graduated in July and already are applying for the match, and hopefully we'll see more of that. The U.S. students and graduates are unfamiliar with the U.S. process for applying for residency and learning about programs. And residency programs in the U.S., conversely, are unfamiliar with Elam, both the faculty and its students. So what MEDIC, Medical Education Cooperation with Cuba, is doing, which is the organization with which I volunteer, is we have developed several support programs over the past 5 or 6 years to specifically support Elam students both during their training and after graduation. We have a fellowship program which provides funding to those who qualify to help defray the examination preparation costs as well as to take the exams. This is foundation-based money and we're very grateful for this, and we have now funded, I think, at least 30 or 40 students to take the USMLEs. We have developed a mentorship program over the past 5 years with which I've been very involved. We're connecting students with graduates, students and graduates, with physicians around the country. We now have about 85 mentors who work with the students on a year-round basis, helping them learn about specialty areas and helping bring them to the U.S. when they're here on summer break to perhaps work with them, shadow them, and we've even developed a community connections program where we have developed summer externships and even some clerkships in community clinics and public hospitals. And in being able to have students have hands-on clinical care on a regular core rotation in the U.S. Took a lot of effort by MEDIC, and we have been able to even provide malpractice insurance for these students so that the institutions who are having these students on rotations don't have to worry about it. So this past two summers, we've had internal medicine, pediatric and family medicine rotations, and OB at Highland Hospital in Alameda County, and at the Kaiser System in Oakland and in Fremont, and I believe here in San Francisco. Finally, we have a pilot project this year for residency outreach, where we're targeting specific programs in the U.S. that have similar social issues like Elam does, where the idea of social accountability in medical education and medical care is paramount. And also, there is an alumni association which now has developed. Just this year, it's been launched, and it's called USA. And the alumni are focusing on helping Elam students with the residency application process as well. So there are opportunities for you here in the audience to learn more about Elam as well as Cuba. We would encourage you who are health professionals to mentor students if you're interested. Have students rotate through you during the rotate with you during the summer. We'd encourage you to talk with faculty at programs that have accepted Elam graduates. These include Montefiore in the Bronx, Bronx Lebanon, University of Alabama, University of Illinois in Chicago, University of New Mexico, Contra Costa County Regional Medical Center here in California, and Emory University, and there are others that I'm forgetting, but the numbers are growing. We'd also encourage you, if you haven't been to Cuba before, to go there. Learn about the healthcare system, learn about the medical education, and then you can visit Elam and see the students, meet them, and learn more about them. And if you're interested in going to Cuba, Medic facilitates educational and research programs, and Rachel True, he's the academic program director at Elam, whose email address is here and phone number is there, although you'll get somebody else because Rachel just had her second child. But we would welcome your joining us, and we would welcome taking questions, and thanks for your attention. Take care.
Thank you to all our panelists. They did a wonderful job in describing the various aspects of medical education and their experiences in public health throughout the world. We have plenty of time for questions and discussions, so wanted to do that. So wanted to open it up to the floor for questions. If you could speak as loud as you possibly can, and then we'll then try to certainly channel that to a particular person or to the entire group. So any questions or comments, please?
So you've mentioned about the need for greater cooperation from people in public health. And I come from the School of Public Health, and our students are becoming more and more interested in programs like these. What opportunities would you see for collaboration with schools of public health to get those students into the system so hopefully help to meet some of the needs in the population?
Would anybody like to respond? We do have, I hope this stretches, so we do have a mic available if anybody would like to respond. That may be as far as it goes. I'm pulling until as long as the, I think we're okay. It's fine. Gracias.
In Arizona State Medical University, as I said, they have also a public health school. In my career, basically had sciences. Also, they do have very phenomenal public health school. In a matter of fact, I would say my career university is far ahead in outreach programs and doing phenomenally research in public health arena. The Rakai cohort, for instance, headed by Hopkins Group, Tom Quinn, and also Asuma Kombo himself. I would say that would be one area of the great overlap interest, both in Kazan as well as in my career. So if somebody is interested in that, I would be delighted to link you to the right people in both of the institutions for exchange of the idea, exchange of the students, and carrying some research project together with the communities.
Anybody else to respond to that?
Collaboration with Cuba, because of relations between the United States and the island, is very difficult at best. Many people travel to Cuba to learn about the healthcare system, and actually one of the projects that Medic has is community collaborations with community clinics. And these have occurred with agencies in Oakland, California, Los Angeles, California, and Albuquerque, New Mexico. With links to the schools of public health in those regions. And these collaborations have brought students and health professionals to the island. And they have learned about the healthcare system and have been able to bring back and trying to implement some programs or ideas for programs in their local communities. An example has been chronic care management, specifically diabetes,
CUMIT has a very unique diabetes educational intervention and management program. And some of the folks at Alameda County in Oakland have been trying to implement that at the community clinic level. So the potential for cooperation and collaboration is quite significant, but challenging because of the relations between the country. Diane Applebaum is the U.S. Director of Medic. I see her raising her hand, so she probably wants to mention that something.
I just passed around. So tomorrow morning at 8:30, there is going to be a workshop with all the people from Alameda County talking about actually what they can do to adapt to the people model. So I encourage you to all come to the conference.
So being able to go to Cuba, though, yeah, when I went to speak at the 12th Circuit of the Cuban Congress, I had to go through a lot of stuff through our government to just get permission to be able to go. How do your students get permission to go? What are the things that they need to do to be able to go down and actually study there?
Just I don't know if you all heard the question.
That's what I was going to ask. Did everybody hear the question in the back? Yes? No?
No.
Could you repeat that?
Yeah, the question is in terms of traveling to Cuba, particularly for health professionals, can be very, very challenging. How are the U.S. students able to do this? The evolution of this program was that when the Congressional Black and Latino Caucuses were visiting Cuba in 1999 or 2000, they visited the imam and they learned about the school and they met with officials from the Ministry of Public Health as well as Fidel Castro, who then was the president. And several people in the caucuses stood up and said, you know, we in the United States have significantly underserved areas in both rural and urban parts of our country where we need physicians. Why can't U.S. students come to study at a level? And the Cuban government said, of course, why not? And they offered 500 scholarships to U.S. students to come. So arrangements were made through the State Department. The U.S. students travel through the State Department and they have a permanent license as students travel, they're studying online to go back and forth. It's a bit easier to travel to Cuba now under the Obama administration. There are now people-to-people programs and cultural exchanges, so things are opening up. It's still nowhere near where it should be, and who knows what will happen after November 6th. But to cut to the chase, the U.S. students are able to travel under license by the U.S. State Department.
In the back, please.
I'd like to know from the thoughts of the panelists about how we can better utilize some of the legal immigrants that are here that have come from other countries but have backgrounds in medicine and nursing, find it very difficult to enter the U.S. workforce.
Legal immigrants. Anybody want to try commenting on the legal immigrants here in the United States?
Great question.
That's a really good question. I don't have a great answer except part of this is bias. I think we set the bar so high for international health professionals when they come to the United States that it almost, to me, in its opinion, seems discriminatory. And I think, particularly since we have such a physician shortage in primary care, that we should be doing something to ameliorate that in the issue. But I don't know. I really don't have anything to say beyond that.
There's another question here, please.
This is specifically regarding the short-term volunteerism. Considering how the ethical dilemmas that exist and kind of how difficult they are to overcome, do you think that continuing these kinds of programs appropriate,
or that NGOs target, use their limited resources in a better way to help the health globally? I think that the projects and the organizations should still continue their efforts. The question is just the preparation that's done in advance, and I think that needs to be done both by the organizations and by the individuals themselves that are traveling abroad. They're professionals too, so they know what needs to be done to see a patient and provide the care in other countries. Is there another part of the question?
So just partially in response to the last question, going to many medical conferences as a clinician, seeing public health and global health evolve, I think you're question is very interesting because in the medical world, you know, we're barely just getting to think about the ethics of global health problems. So the fact you're asking a question of a group that's actually looking at those ethics, that'd be very interesting. This group is progressing far beyond what the medical model is already, and you're already challenging to move even beyond that. So the fact that questions here is a good thing. I wanted to commend our speakers for talking about specifically a couple of really interesting South-South models. You noticed that Dr. Sadik's experience, I think if I understood it correctly, was to have your Russian colleagues who sought public health education, you didn't try to bring them to the Yale School of Medicine to the Department of Public Health. You actually had them go to Makerere for public health education. And similarly, Dr. Quinn's, your model was it's essentially functioning as education in a developing setting. I want to emphasize there are fantastic schools of public health throughout the world. We are not the center of public health learning by any means, certainly no longer. And many of them are in developing countries. We heard from the dean of the INSP in Cuernavaca, Mexico, at the last session. So I encourage all of you who are interested in public health, who have the interest and the means, to actually think about pursuing a public health education outside of the US. Bangladesh probably has one of the best schools of public health anywhere, Bragg School, set up by the Gates Foundation. Mm-hmm. And you might think about broadening your horizons by doing public health where public health is done. So just want to throw that out and observe that for the group.
I would just only to comment that many years ago, when we tried to bring some of the colleagues from Africa to the United States for capacity building, we learned that in a matter of fact, they can't put hands on patients because of the phenomenal restriction that we have, the regulation that we have in the United States. You have to go through ECFMGs, and very often when you bring somebody for 6 months or 1 year, you are not really ECFMG certified. So that was the original talk, that we need to go from basically bi-partnership to tripartite partnerships. So let me only explain, for instance, in Russia, you can do neurosurgery. So if you are, you need to learn the neurosurgical skills under supervision, you can do the neurosurgery. In the United States, there is no way that you can do that. You can go for the stimulation, obviously, robotic, but putting a hand on the patient is impossible. So we made a curriculum that basically part of the capacity building would happen at Yale, those things that we can offer. But then the procedures, you have two only options. You send somebody as a neurosurgeon from Duke University to Makerere, that's what Duke is doing, or sending somebody from Yale to go to Makerere and start really teaching the neurosurgery. They don't have the technology, they don't have the facility. Or then send somebody from Makerere, in a matter of fact, to Russia for that. At this point of time, I saw a combo in a matter of fact writing a memorandum of understanding to send some of his faculty for procedure capacity building to Russia. So I think that would be the way that we are starting about this tripartite relationship.
I want to, please stop. I was going to ask a question.
Yeah. I'd just like to bring your attention, relevant to the talks of several of the people here, some of the resources that we're working on and various groups are working on. One is a pediatric modular course for pediatric residents. And this is a new thing because the residents have not received much attention to this. And an interactive course, the team from the American Academy of Pediatrics is developing 13 modules, and they're really very exciting and should be available within a year. And we're hoping that similar ones do in internal medicine. Second, in terms of Emily's remarks here, we have about 90 case studies in adult medicine that have been developed based on experience in Uganda. And they're really very exciting. I've been reviewing some of them. They're not yet online. But basically, the first we'll be releasing these, in which the first part gives the presenting symptoms and signs and the basic laboratory. And then 2 to 3 weeks later, we'll have the instructor's notes, which are much more detailed in terms of all of this business of how to make decisions where you don't have all the lab and the imaging things, and where you're dealing with probabilities big time. A third is Stanford and Boston University have developed collaboratively a series of modules on ethical issues for students. And it's a really a great asset. I think it will soon be on the CUGH website on Stanford. and where you have a video presentation of student and patient and the issue that they go through, and you march through it. And I think more of those kinds of things. Lastly, I just mentioned that the Canadian Society of or Academy of Family Practice about 3 or 4 years ago had a very nice article dealing in 4 steps how doctors first put their toe in the water for international service, and then if they want to put in more than one toe, what's the next step, and going through asking the kinds of questions that you have and really focusing on how to get started and how to get overcome that initial reticence about getting involved. Thank you.
Dr. Lawrence, please, and then I actually wanted to ask Dr. Lawrence a question.
No, that's a short reaction, because certainly we are trying to build this cooperation internationally in the framework of global health. And certainly it's very remarkable on humanitarian, the role of the volunteers going from developed country to developing countries in order to assist more, to see how we can improve people's health. And usually we see with some concern that always we examine this problem as how to treat, how to improve diagnosis, how to improve treatment, and our role as, let's call, the role of not health professionals, but disease-oriented professionals. So I think also that the volunteers, they can fulfill a role trying to keep more people healthy rather than to just support clinical activities. For example, we are investing internationally around 80% of the entire, let's say, health research on diagnosis and treatment. But the research on health services or local, national, or international health policies is very reduced. So we try that, for example, visitors, students, or young professionals coming from countries like United States or Europe or different countries in Latin America be also active, being involved in defining health policies, health strategies, and advocating for in order that the right to health and right to health care be really reflected during in legislations or national regulations. So we are training usually public health experts, and they should be prepared not just to examine the situation according to their own context, but also having the experience and being familiar with difficulties when you want to change or to introduce reforms to health system or to amend health policies, because probably these young colleagues in the future will have to go to Africa, to Asia, to Bolivia, and they have also be prepared in order to offer suggestions, contributions to reforms for health system and health policies.
Thank you. Any other questions? I wanted to pose a question to all of you, but particularly Dr. Lodge, is making me thinking. And that has to do working with indigenous populations. In Philadelphia, one of the rotations that our medical students, fourth year medical students, or fall electives that they take, especially those in public health, doing dually, is going to the Indian Health Service and working with Native American indigenous populations in the United States. Bolivia, of course, is one of the most indigenous countries in the Americas. Experience in working with and the unique cultural aspects of that interchange of working with indigenous populations in the various countries you work with. So it could be, you can start here and then.
Yale Medical School sends students for primary care to China, to the Phoenix, close to Phoenix in Indian Reservation. Very popular, very popular rotation. and University of Vermont and Danbury now, we are putting together basically an elective for medical students and residents in a matter of fact, Katrina, a stroke in place in Arizona.
Do you want to say anything from Bolivia's perspective?
Yeah, coming back to this issue, well, we appreciate, of course, the collaboration of Cuba, and we are sending annually I think an important contingent of my compatriots here, people to train there. And it's very nice because they have, we the Bolivians, and I think in Latin America more or less situation is the same. We have a very curative approach of what's health. Meanwhile in Cuba, as you mentioned before, the approach is completely different. It's health promotion, health prevent or risk prevention, health research. So, and we wonder, when they come back to Bolivia, it's good because it's a way to confront what they have learned in Cuba to keep people healthy, rather than the Bolivian style to react when people is ill and suffer. And so that's the way we can influence also our national authorities. And nowadays, in our constitution, promotes health promotion and risk prevention receive enough effort. And that's the experience also we have with our colleagues thanks to the support of the Taulo University, because the master's degree or the postgraduate studies they are implementing, well, when they come to visit us in Bolivia, we expose them with case studies saying, in this situation in Bolivia, how you will solve this problem? So they became familiar, because as mentioned before, in the future we don't know, and we will be certainly proud if our young colleagues of the Taulo University or even our students of the San Andres University in Bolivia, they are well prepared to accept and to deal and to meet the challenges of global health. Because again, I repeat, global health is responsibility of every of us, and we have to play our social role there.